Sci in the World, I'm John Batchelor. The Indo-Pacific, a vast canvas. In the Indo-Pacific is what is called Oceania, the vast network of islands sovereign, some colonial, some influenced, some the U.S. All across this map is a way of understanding the present contest between the People's Republic of China and the United States and its allies in the Pacific, Australia especially, but also New Zealand, Japan, Philippines. All of those states threatened because of the Chinese threat to the Taiwanese and the promise, the swearing by Xi Jinping that the People's Liberation Army will recapture Taiwan at some point in the immediate future. This makes the map of the Pacific part of the struggle right now ongoing for the People's Republic of China's PLA to prevent or interrupt the U.S. Navy driving to the Eastern Pacific in the event of war. It's all quite fantastic, but it's happened before. It was called the Second War. And from the Hawaii Islands, you can drive across the Corridor of Freedom to the Philippines and on from there to Taiwan and the South China Sea. But the People's Republic of China is watching. So I welcome Cleo Pascal of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, who travels Oceania. And we're going to start in the north, the Commonwealth of Northern Mariana Islands. This is U.S. territory. It abuts Japan. It's north of Guam. And right now, there are unused casinos on two of the islands, Saipan and Tinian. And I know this begins like a mystery, but Cleo will help us understand what those casinos represent, what they can now turn into, and why the People's Republic of China is again interested in gambling on U.S. territory. Cleo, a very good evening to you. The background of the Marianas includes, of course, the Pacific War. The Enola Gay and the Boxcar took off from Tinian. The Saipan was a major hub and depot for the U.S. Navy in the war with Japan. Guam now is that same island to the south of the Northern Marianas. But those casinos, when you first presented this story to me, I thought, this is a whopper. How do casinos work in a war, in a warfare environment? What do they represent to the PLA and the PRC? Good evening to you, Cleo.
Good evening. When you're dealing with the PRC, especially with the influence operations across countries in the Pacific, but elsewhere, what you tend to see is a commercial front. So they'll come in and they'll say, we're gonna help you with employment, with investment, those sorts of things, which is, you know, very popular, especially now during these economic hard times. But there's always a strategic component to it. How does it help the comprehensive national power push of the PRC? Sometimes it could be physical positioning, like getting access to a port. Sometimes it's access to political leaders that then gives them more of a strategic reach and the soft power perspective. But then there's this third element, which is incredibly common. It's almost inevitable, which is the criminal component. And that criminality or that corruption gets into a country and, again, gives more control over the levers of power. They'll buy off certain politicians or customs or, collude with organized crime to be enforcers for certain policies, that sort of thing. And casinos are a perfect venue for all of that. They're great for money laundering. You have to bring in your security. So there's no question about why this Chinese company is bringing in all of these security cameras or other pieces of equipment that would be used for security in a casino. But the casino itself might be in proximity to sensitive location. Like the you mentioned there, too, there's the new one in Tinian. There was one in Tinian that is closed, but now there's a new one in Tinian. That's built right on the port, which is the port that the U.S. is in the process of building up for more military activity on Tinian. The U.S. military has a lease on about two-thirds of the island of Tinian. And that port is where that casino is going to be very important strategically for that. And who knows what security equipment has been brought into that casino. And then there's the money laundering. That casino on Saipan at one point was running more money through its tables, just 16 VIP tables, than the biggest casinos in Macau, billions and billions of dollars, with very little oversight, apparently. I mean, the U.S. government probably knew what was going on, but didn't stop it. And it was only shut down when, in the process of constructing a new casino building, which looks like a 1980s teenager's fantasy version of Versailles with, crystal dragons and gold trimmings, all that sort of stuff. One of the workers there died. Now, when he died, what they found out was he was there on a tourist visa. And this is another unusual thing about CNMI. CNMI was given control over its own labor laws, which is where all of the garment factories that popped up before China entered the WTO ended up being in CNMI so that they could say made in America and get access to the U.S. market. But it was also given control over some of its immigration. And Chinese tourists can, to this day, arrive in CNMI without a visa. And they can arrive as tourists without a visa. And what the Chinese casino was doing was getting these tourists and using them as construction workers and who knows what else on those facilities. And so the guy that fell off the scaffolding and died while building that Chinese casino was on a tourist visa. And that was apparently too much. And that resulted in the shutting down of that facility, not the revocation of the gambling license, but the shutting down of that facility.
So what we have here is an open door to U.S. territory, correct? That once the tourists are there without a visa and they're not tracked, and I believe you've told me that there's evidence that the Chinese then can boat across to Guam, which is the most national security sensitive site in the Northern Pacific. That's the anchor for the U.S. Navy in the event of war in East Asia. And there's no monitoring of these visa-less tourists if they cross to Guam?
They're supposed to stay in CNMI, but 20 or so were caught on a boat on the way to Guam. And what I heard when I was there was that the estimates are that hundreds have gone across successfully in the past few months. Who knows how many before that? But yeah, it's this back door into the U.S. And the new governor of CNMI, Arnold Palacios, is a very courageous man. And he's testified before Congress recently saying, he wants to clean up his government. I've never heard of this before, where a governor, an American governor, says, please send more FBI agents, set up a district attorney's office, do a forensic audit of all of my government accounts. I want to know what's gone wrong in my jurisdiction, and I want to clean it up. And I think there are quite a few also in CNMI who'd be quite happy to have that visa loophole closed, which is a Homeland Security decision that can be closed instantaneously. So, you have all of these problems that have been accumulating for decades in CNMI, and you have this rare moment of a new governor who knows what's wrong with his own system, being willing to stand at the forefront and say, help me fix this, please.
The Japanese waters are abut the Commonwealth of Northern Mariana Island waters. Is Japan aware of these activities, and are they at risk as well? Can you take a boat and travel into Japan in the same fashion?
It would be quite a bit further. So it's about 2,500 kilometers to Okinawa from Saipan, and roughly the same to Taiwan as well. But it's more that they're affected by the undermining of the integrity of the U.S. security perimeter. So, we've seen, for example, the cyber infiltration attempts from the PRC into Guam. And I would expect, CNMI would be very similar. So it would be more that you may have this infiltration that makes it so that the installations that are designed to protect the U.S., but also protect Taiwan and Japan are compromised. And in an event of an attack, it would be probably primarily on Taiwan, are rendered at least less functional, with all sorts of surprises in terms of being able to operate from there.
One more detail. 16 tables, billions of dollars. They must have never slept round the clock. Do we know who those people are? Were they named? Do they have documents?
The documents certainly exist. So what you're referring to is one of the casinos at the height of its operations, with just 16 gambling tables, VIP tables, was running billions of dollars through those Saipan casinos. And what I heard was what they were doing was giving lines of credit to the Chinese gamblers to come and gamble in Saipan. So it was a very complex operation. I'm not sure how that money was being laundered or not, but it makes no sense from a commercial perspective to be running that amount of money through Saipan, through an American jurisdiction, unless you're doing something who knows what else.
Cleo, show me a photograph of the casino. It sticks up above the whole town and over the water to Tinian. It's now crumbling. The fountains are tipped over. But in any event, it's a high point if you're considering yourself as operating surveillance in wartime. Cleo Pascala, Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. We're headed south from the Marianas and from Guam to the Federated States of Micronesia and more mysterious activity by the People's Republic of China. And this time, the Federated States of Micronesia are under U.S. protection. What kind of protection? This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Lee.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.